Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Did you realize that Paris Hilton served more time in prison than Scooter Libby will? Think about that for a second. Paris Hilton served more time in prison than Scooter Libby will. Jesus. We'll talk about the commutation of Scooter Libby's prison time later on in the program. As a matter of fact, in about 30 minutes, I keep saying 9 in the East, Shelley Drobny will join us with some comments about this miscarriage of justice. For you Sam Cedar fans, a bit of good news. I will be off Thursday the 12th, traveling to Seattle. And Sam will be filling in for me on the Nova M Radio Network. That's coming up in... what's the date today? This is the second. I had a birthday party over the weekend. And everything is kind of a blur. All I remember is Brad Friedman. It was a great time. But anyway, in 10 days, Sam Cedar will be sitting in for me on this network. So that ought to be fun. What else have we got? I just can't get over Paris Hilton serving more jail time than Scooter Libby. Come on, Mike. This is America. The New York Stock Exchange last Thursday barred Michael Moore from the floor of the exchange. He was scheduled to do an interview with CNBC reporter Maria Bartiromo on Wall Street and in the financial markets. Michael Moore says Bartiromo wanted to interview me on the floor of the stock exchange at closing bell. But he was going to be joined by a cadre of he had a press conference. He was barred from going onto the floor. The security system at stock exchange told him to get the hell out of the building. So during the a press conference to talk about his latest film, Sicko, he was joined by a cadre of registered nurses, and Moore was calling for investors to divest from publicly traded health insurance companies, some of which are listed on the New York Stock Exchange. You know, the whole idea of owning stock and trading in in companies that deal in illness and sickness and death, and don't tell me that that money is used for to find cures, because it's not. That's bat squeeze. That's BS of the highest order. I hope this movie shakes this country to its foundations where it concerns health care. What else? We've been talking a lot lately for this program, talking a lot on one topic, and that is the total dominance of talk radio by right-wing neo-Nazis like Bush and Hannity, Limbaugh and Hannity and the rest of them. Since I say neo-Nazi, the word Bush pops into my mind. And, excuse me. How the Republicans now are terrified, the conservatives are terrified that there's going to be legislation introduced to restore the Fairness Doctrine. And that will deny the conservatives their dominance. Wait a second, I thought it was the liberal media. what are the conservatives talking about? You would think, wouldn't you, since it is the liberal media, that's how they have identified it, the conservatives would be clamoring to get the Fairness Doctrine back so that they could get their opinions heard. Wouldn't you? Huh? It is, after all, the liberal media, isn't it? Isn't that the phrase that has been rammed down everybody's throat and in their ears for the past 15 or 20 years? The liberal media? And now there's an attempt to bring fairness back, and the conservatives say, oh, well, that'll end our dominance. Wait, no, no. They're insane, these bastards. They are totally insane. Well, to prevent that from happening, the reinstatement of the Fairness Doctrine. I was looking at the name McCain here, and I think of institutionalized. See, I'm just triggered very easily here. Word association: Bush, neo-Nazi. McCain institutionalized. Boom, man, I'm easy. In order to prevent the liberals from taking over, Arizona Senator John McCain has introduced federal legislation to protect radio talk shows from the reinstatement of the Fairness Doctrine. Huh? McCain and fellow senators Norm Coleman of Minnesota, who's on his last legs because Al Franken's going to whip his ass, even though I don't like Al Franken, Norm Coleman, John Thune of South Dakota, and John McCain have put forward legislation preventing the reinstatement of the Fairness Doctrine. Huh? Hey, how about that? Now, the Fairness Doctrine was done away with during the Reagan years, and it required political radio shows like this one to offer equal time to opposing viewpoints as part of the Federal Communications Commission licenses. Now, why would Republicans, since it's the liberal media, why would Republicans be going so far as to introduce legislation to prevent the Fairness Doctrine? All it means is they would get a chance, finally. Right? Oh. A number of Democrats and liberal advocates want the Fairness Doctrine put back in place. Well, yeah. McCain said imposing rules incorporated in the Fairness Doctrine would stifle free speech. And there are plenty of political viewpoints in the marketplace. Hey, McCain, you PTSD freak. Where's your brain back in? No offense to guys who are really suffering for it. But McCain was a coward. He used to bomb civilians from 20,000 feet in the air until an errant North Korean missile brought his ass down. Hey, McCain, you must have left some part of your brain in the Hanoi Hilton. Eh, sport? It's your media. Or no, wait a minute. It's the liberal media. Well, which is it? You right-wing thugs have been talking about the liberal media for so long, your brains are turning into liquid. And now you want to prevent what? If it's liberal media, why would you stop the Fairness Doctrine? Oh, never mind. But you get the point. God, these people make me sick. Have you heard what's happened in Virginia? The Bush crime family has so destroyed the budgets of the various states that in a desperate attempt to raise revenue in Virginia, a new law went into effect July 1st. Virginia will be the home of the $3,000 traffic ticket. Huh? It began yesterday. Virginia is now adding new civil charges to traffic fines. They range from $750 to $3,000 and will be added to the existing fines and court costs. For example, the civil penalty for going 20 miles an hour of the speed limit. If you're driving 75 and you get busted in Virginia, the civil penalty will be $1,050 plus $61 in court costs. That fine is typically $200. The civil penalty for going 20 miles an hour, in other words, will be almost $1,200. The new traffic penalties in Virginia are expected to raise $65 million a year and are part of an effort to improve the state's roads. A first-time drunk driver will face a $2,250 civil penalty plus fines and court costs. Well, I think a first-time drunk driver ought to lose his or her license to drive for the rest of their useless, pissy life. I really do. Drunk drivers? Oh, no mercy. No mercy. $2,200 penalty for a first-time drunk driver? No. Take the rat bastard's license away for the rest of his life. Forever. I don't care. Don't tell me he needs his license to go for kidney dialysis. I don't care. Somebody gets drunk, gets behind the wheel of a car, you never, ever drive again. Oh, by the way, these civil penalties only apply to Virginia residents, not out-of-state drivers. So we now have a two-tiered legal system in Virginia. I'm sure the Supreme Court will uphold that.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
One other item here. The University of Michigan at Dearborn announced a couple of weeks ago its plans to spend $25,000 on the installation of two foot baths in two campus bathrooms this August. And when I first read that, I thought, what, they've got an outbreak of athlete's foot? What's this? The university said the foot baths stations are necessary because they need to accommodate the university's large Muslim population, because many Muslims perform cleansing rituals that require them to wash their hands, face, and feet before prayer up to five times a day, said the said Tom Baird, Vice Chancellor for Institutional Advancement, the University of Dearborn campus. Mr. Baird said some Muslim students had been washing their feet in the bathroom sinks, provoking concerns for safety and sanitation. The two foot baths will be installed in the University Center and Fairlane Center South buildings, he said. He said the money for the project came from fees students pay for campus infrastructure maintenance and renovation. Because this money comes from students, Baird said they should be able to put it toward better accommodating the students at the university. But those opposing this idea claim the university has no right to install the foot washing stations because to do so would be to violate the First Amendment that calls for a separation of church and state and public institutions. Supporters of the foot baths say the university's Dearborn campus is not violating the law because non-Muslim students can wash their feet, too. Yeah, that'll happen. Hal Downs, president of the Michigan chapter of the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, said the foot baths are too religious to be present at a public institution. He said they're religious in nature and have no secular use. Mr. Downs, the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, which is an atheist organization that I deeply respect, said he would be concerned about how they would be used secularly because, quote, the opportunity for defilement is very, very obvious, end quote. Well, sure, you know, you're going to get some Muslim hater walk up to one of the foot baths and urinate in it. That'll happen 10 minutes after these things are installed. You know it and I know it. And then we've got a major outbreak of Muslim and Christian or Muslim and Jewish confrontation on the campus, University of Michigan, Dearborn. What the hell is going on? Mr. Downs, president of Michigan chapter of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, said his organization would rather see something like, rubber floor mats to protect against slips and falls, or stools for students to sit on where cleaning their feet instead of foot washing stations. Yeah, well, why not bring in little stools and some of these little handy wipes like we have used on Molly's ass since she's been born when she has peed her diaper? And you wipe your feet clean and then go pray if that's what you need to do while you're in class. Okay, no big deal. Clean your own damn feet. What is hard about this? But no, let's have the university spend this money, and then we'll have the Muslims versus everyone else on campus, and you know it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. Some non-Muslim is going to come pee in the foot bath. You know, like I said, 10 minutes after they fill it with water, it'll also be full of pee. My God. The vice president of the Muslim Students Association at this campus said his organization fully supports the construction of the foot baths, quote, but it needs to be cleared up that it's not strictly for the Muslim students. It's available for all students, end quote. Now, that's one of the most disingenuous statements I've ever heard. college students are going to pause somewhere and wash their feet? Get real! Oh, my God. It is getting weirder and weirder, isn't it? A junior at the College of Arts and Sciences and Letters, who is Muslim, said he doesn't feel comfortable using the school sinks to wash his feet. So he wants the little pools. Well, bring a towel. Can't you bring a warm, wet towel, put it in your backpack, and when it's time to pray, wash your feet that way? What do you want to do? Do you want to dip your feet into a little stone foot bath that's half pee and half water? What the hell is wrong with you? This is America. Come on. Come on.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Remember when George W. Bush was governor of Texas and he was asked to commute the death penalty of a woman named Carla Faye Tucker, who had taken a pickaxe and turned her husband and his girlfriend, I believe, into something beyond recognition as two human beings. And she was sentenced to die. And during her time in prison, she refound Jesus and became an evangelical behind the bars, saving souls for her Lord and Savior Jesus, to the extent that Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, and the Pope begged George Bush to commute her sentence, life in prison without the possibility of parole. And George Bush and Karl Rove sat around, and this was the famous audio that's out there where Bush is mimicking Carla Faye Tucker. Please don't kill me. Please don't kill me. And then signed her death warrant. Now, he and even the warden of the prison had made some comments that Carla Faye, if ever there was a rehabilitated prisoner, someone who had committed really an atrocious crime, however, it was a crime of passion. You define that any way you want. But Carla Faye Tucker, like anyone who has come before George W. Bush and Alberto Gonzalez and Karl Rove in Texas, anyone who came before them for commutation of sentence was denied. Even death penalty cases, and estimates are that in Bush's time as governor, at least 30 innocent people were executed by this unconscionable bastard. But Scooter Libby commuted. Joining us now is the founder of Nova M and Air America, Shelley Drobny, who I think might be a little pissed off about this. Are you?
Well, I think I'm as pretty pissed off as any one of your listeners about the injustice and the fact that a person from his own administration was commuted, had his sentence commuted. But, 2 years ago when you were in Air America, we had a conversation about the criminal justice system in America and Fitzgerald and how the inner workings go.
Right.
And I just wanted to kind of inform the people, because I've been both on the prosecution side and defense side of federal white-collar crimes.
Right.
And not as a defendant, but as a consultant.
right. As an expert witness.
As an expert, and I can practice in the United States Tax Court. Now, the way this works is, no matter how angry we are, the president has an absolute right to pardon and commute sentences. I mean, that is not reviewable in any court. And right. So this is a political process now. And, you know, but I did want to get to some of the things that the president did say in his reasons for commuting the sentence.
Right.
He said that the harshness of the penalty was the prime reason. And I can tell you with great certainty that 30 months is part of what they call the federal guidelines of sentencing. And he received the sentence that was appropriate to the seriousness of the crime, and that's hardly an excuse for a commutation of the sentence. The sentence was based upon obstruction of justice and perjury.
Right.
And that's the guideline. So that's a phony one for sure. And as far as the other argument that conservatives have, is there was no conviction in the underlying crime. And the underlying crime was, disclosing information about an undercover agent.
Right.
Well, 90% of prosecutions in the federal system have to do with obstruction of justice and of perjury, and very often the underlying crime is not even a part of the indictment.
Right.
For example, with Martha Stewart, she was not indicted or convicted for insider trading.
That's right, for lying.
Okay, you know that. It was not the underlying crime. It was never proven. It was lying to the FBI.
Lying to the FBI.
Right.
And not even in a sworn deposition, I don't think. It was just an interview.
It wasn't even under oath, as a matter of fact.
Right. It was just an interview.
Right.
And
right.
She serves, what did she serve, 6 months, 7 months?
Well, she served 6 months or 7 months, and obviously the judge took into consideration, lots of other things. But, certainly that was not nearly as serious as what... Allowing a CIA agent and lying about it. I mean, so, let the punishment fit the crime. But now we have a situation where the very reason for the commutation was based upon the serious punishment. And I think every attorney that's ever been interviewed since, the commutation of the sentence has said that's absolute poppycock.
Right, right. Well, you can all, and I think this needs to be considered too, and I'm sure the sentencing judge considered this. This right-wing argument that no crime of revealing her identity was ever pinned on anybody in the Bush administration so far, certainly not Libby, is beside the point. The reason it wasn't was because of what he did.
Right. Well,
the lies and the lies and deceptions that Libby, among others, used to divert Fitzgerald away from a proper reconciliation of this case.
As a matter of fact, Fitzgerald said obstruction of justice.
Yes.
Strong stand in the umpire's face.
Yes.
And again, that is at least as serious, if not more serious. But nevertheless, most of the people don't know that obstruction of justice is probably one of the most serious crimes that you can commit in a federal investigation. I mean, that's like deep sixing information.
Right, and that was one of the articles of impeachment against Dick Nixon.
Right. But I'll give you the positive side to this. Can I give you a positive side?
Sure.
Okay.
Now he can be subpoenaed.
Well, no, not necessarily. He can be subpoenaed, and he can be given immunity, and if he doesn't testify, he
by
can
the
go
Congress,
to jail.
Right.
But
right.
The Joe Wilson case is really lurking out there. In which Joe Wilson and his wife are suing the president and his minions for what they call it's sort of like a civil rights case, but at the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
There's a special case called, I can't remember the precedent, but the case, it's called Bivens. It's a Bivens case in which you can sue a federal official for going beyond his duties as a federal official, okay?
Oh, that's
and doing it for purposes of vindictiveness. Now, given that Cheney is, I don't even know what he is, whether he's part of the executive branch. He claims he's not a part of the executive branch.
Right.
So he's certainly gone beyond his duties, whatever they are, which it appears he's decided on his own. He has no duty as an executive. It really strengthens the case with Wilson. And with Wilson in a civil case, they could subpoena lots of information, and that information could be very devastating with regard to proving the case. Now, the one hurdle that Wilson has to get through is in a civil case, he has to get through what they call a motion to dismiss. And if the judge allows the case to go on, then you're all hell's going to break loose in terms of the discovery part. So
well,
that could be a very positive thing.
What could be a normal expectation
for the results
of the discovery part?
Well, they can certainly have a deposition of the vice president. They can have a deposition of Scooter Livy. It's unlikely he could take the Fifth Amendment. And, you know, although he could, because there's possible other crimes there, but there's a lot of opening here for the civil case. And if you remember, President Clinton was hurt more by the civil case,
sure,
if you recall, and the deposition within the civil case. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That came out of a deposition in a civil case.
With Paula Jones. That's why he lost his law license.
Exactly. Now, right. If, in fact, we can take the civil case and move this along, and the judge doesn't knock it out, you know, because he just dismisses the case, and again, in D.C., it's very likely the judge won't knock it out, you have a pretty good case there for which you can get a lot of information.
Let me ask you, in your opinion, why did Bush issue this commutation 5 hours after the appeals court said no, go to jail? Why come here? Are they afraid that Libby was going to talk?
Yeah, I think that was a quid pro quo, number one. Number two, and they couldn't possibly take the risk that after, you know, 30 months in prison, I don't care if it's the nicest place in the world, you know, there was always the possibility, and prosecutors always have that over people's heads. The commutation of the sentence could have happened one of two ways, either by Bush or by Fitzgerald. If he would have played ball, Fitzgerald could also have commuted his sentence or recommended to the judge.
So
and I don't think they wanted to take that chance, and they wanted to get rid of it before the 2008 election.
So
I don't think it's going away, though.
This is a preemptive strike by Bush to beat Fitzgerald to the offer of commutation if Libby would talk.
Right. I'll make one other comment, and I think this is important.
All right.
You know, Cheney is now defied the Senate with regard to documents and subpoenas.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard Leahy say that he is considering criminal contempt for people in the Bush administration. It seems to me if you really want documents, then I think you have no choice but to impeach. If they really are serious about getting the documents, because if you impeach the vice president and he does not submit the documents in the Senate, then he's definitely going to be convicted in the Senate because you can't claim executive privilege in an impeachment and think you can get away with it.
Yeah, that's true. Shelley, we're out of time.
Oh, that's all I wanted to say.
All right. Thanks, Shelley. I appreciate it. We'll talk again.
Take care.
Take care. Hell yeah, we'll talk again. He's the boss. We'll be right back.
I'm hiding in hunger. I'm a desperate man. 10 lawyers, guns, and money.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Well, now we're ready to go phone calls, and we've lost a couple. Our Bailey's Island, Massachusetts. It's Massachusetts. Bureau Chief was on the line there, Matt Com. What's the matter, Matt? Have to hold on longer than 5 minutes? Is that the hell with it? All right, let's go to Kirk, who's calling from Worcester, Mass, listening on the internet. Hey, Kirk.
Yep. Hi.
Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I wanted to tell you that your Congressman Hank Johnson is he signed on to the House Resolution 333.
Yeah, I know. He's my congressman.
Yeah, he signed on to support Pete Cheney.
Yeah, I voted for him. I'm in his district.
Yeah, well, I was a little shocked that he supported the impeachment of Cheney. I mean,
so was I. So was I shocked.
I thought he was going to be a Democrat name only.
Yeah, I thought so too. But that's exactly what Cynthia McKinney would have done, and the fact that Hank Johnson has done it. redeems him. You know, I've got nothing against Hank Johnson for running in a primary against Cynthia McKinney. I'm very pissed off at the power that was used against Cynthia. But if Hank is going to be the kind of representative that this would indicate, well, more power to him. Right?
I think Cynthia would have made sure to have more articles on that. More articles on the impeachment resolution.
Yeah, really.
Dennis only put three. Also, did you notice that 24 Democrats voted against defunding Cheney's office?
Yeah, I didn't know it was 24. I knew it was a substantial number, and
I was shocked reading the names. I mean, Joe Sestak. Congressman Murtha,
right.
Dick Glanson, who replaced Tom DeLay, Zachary Space, who replaced Bob Ney. My head was spinning. I mean, what the heck? Jim McDermott?
Well, the answer is you are naming conservative Democrats because their position is correct on.
Well, Joe Sestak didn't seem, when I hear him speak, I was seeing quite conservative.
Well,
I'm
not sure of Sestak, but Murtha has always been extremely conservative Democrat until he broke with Bush.
Also, Ron Klein, who has been endorsed by Randy Rhodes. Randy Rhodes said he was quite liberal Florida.
All right. Well, I don't know him either that well. So I'm talking out of my hat rather than doing a little research and coming up with the correct answer. All right, Kirk, thanks. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care. I hope we talk again. Let's go to Leah, who's calling from Tampa. Leah's calling from Tampa, listening on the Internet. Hey, Leah.
Hi.
I
haven't talked to you in a very long time, but I email you now and then.
I know. We were going to send out a 911 call on you, but I'm glad you called.
Well, maybe after this call.
Yeah.
If I had talked to you 2 hours ago, I would have been just screaming and shouting into the phone, because when I heard Scooter Libby had been commuted, pardoned, whatever, I just went ballistic. So I took a Valium, which I have a prescription for, so it's okay. I'm trying to be comfortably numb. Anyway.
Yeah, I hear that.
I believe that as we come up on the supposed birthday of our country, really, the other night I was listening to you, and I was listening to you talk about the Supreme Court, and you said something about the country, and I thought, what country? We don't have a country.
Yeah.
It's dead. The Constitution is the country, and if we don't have the Constitution and we don't follow the Constitution, then we don't have a country. We have a bunch of people living in some bit of land. That's it. And then the other thing that occurred to me was I've always wondered, even when I was a little kid, I wondered, you know, how did the Germans let all that happen? How did they?
Now you know.
I do know, because we have literally murdered people. We as a country have literally let people be murdered. At least 135 that I've heard about be tortured to death, murdered, and no one's done a thing about it. So it started, and we're just all like, oh, you know, what's Paris Hilton doing, or whoever? I don't know. I ended up watching The Sopranos because you got me interested in it. And I thought, oh, well, that'll take my mind off of everything. And then I feel like I'm being one of those people that, I don't know, the whole thing is a disaster. I feel like I don't know where to run to.
Well, we're not ready to run yet. What we're ready to do is to get these bastards out of office and get some decent people in. But I'll tell you what, between The Sopranos and Valium, you're going to be okay, Leah. Trust me. And, you know, interesting that you should use the words Independence Day or 4th of July and the word dead, because right after the break at the top of the hour, I have something to read that came from Reggie at TVNewsLies.com, dead on the 4th of July. So don't lose your Internet connection coming back.
Oh, I won't. I listen every night.
Oh, good. Well, thank you.
The whole time.
I wish we were on a station in Tampa, Leah. I really do. Maybe at some point we will be. Thanks for checking in, okay?
I have Sirius in my car, so I can listen when I'm in my car.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. That's good.
Okay, then.
All right. Take care, Leah. Take
care. You too.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Dead on the 4th of July. For he's a Yankee Doodle Dandy, Yankee Doodle do or die. A real live nephew of his Uncle Sam, dead on the 4th of July. That was a George M. Cohan song, and Reggie writes apologies to George M. Cohan. I'm going to read you what her very quick dead on the 4th of July little blog here when we come back after the break. Stick around. We have an awful lot to talk about. And if anybody knows Matt Comm's phone number, call him up and tell him to get back online. We'll take his call. He's our Bailey's Island Bureau Chief in Massachusetts. Stay with us. Or is that Maine? Was it Maine? Maine. That's right. Bailey's Island. Was it Bailey's Island? Something like that.
He doesn't call in enough.
I know he doesn't. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. It's 7 past the hour. From Reggie at TVNewsLies.com, .org, I'm sorry, TVNewsLies.org. I just want to share this with you. We're going to be off on the 4th of July, obviously. They'll do a rerun. And on the 12th of July, we'll be off again. Travel day to big gig in Seattle, sponsored by KTPK, our affiliate out there. And Sam Cedar will be filling in for me. But here it is. Reg starts out by quoting or altering just a bit with apologies to George M. Cohan, the Yankee Doodle Dandy song. And then she writes, "Fly your flags, all you patriots. It's another 4th of July. Fire up the barbecues, ice up the beer, and get ready to celebrate another Independence Day in the good old USA. And be sure not to miss the fabulous fireworks that so majestically explode in the night sky to the music of God Bless America." Makes you proud, doesn't it? And, oh, while you're at it, don't give a moment's thought to the men and women fighting the Bush-PNAC war in Iraq. You know, the troops who are out there supposedly fighting for your freedom or for an end to terror or for regime change or for Iraqi liberation or for the spread of democracy or for oil or for George Bush and Dick Cheney or whatever. Don't let them spoil your fun. After all, it's a holiday. Enjoy. Heck, it's a war and people die, right? Have another hot dog. So what if nearly 3,600 Americans and nearly 300 coalition forces were dead on this 4th of July? So what if hundreds of thousands of Iraqis are dead on this 4th of July? So what if tens of thousands of young men and women are no longer whole in mind and body? It's a holiday. Play ball. Yeah, it's been a bloody few months. The worst, in fact, since that other amazing fireworks show called Shock and Awe. Do you remember that spectacular night? Never mind. It's party time in America. Don't let images of innocent people being blown to bits get in the way of your fun. Don't get upset about a needless war that has been raging for more than 4 years with no end in sight. Just go for a swim on this lovely day. And tomorrow's a work day. Damn. The dead are dead. And there's nothing you can do to change that, right? There will surely be more dead men and women and children tomorrow. And who knows how many thousands will join the dead and dying by the next 4th of July. Oh, that's right. You really don't approve of the war anymore, do you? As a good American, you wouldn't mind seeing it all end. And you really do want the troops to come home one of these days. But what the hell? There's nothing much you can do about it, so don't let it bother you. Relax. Have a beer. But when the songs and starbursts have ended, and when the food is all gone, and you're back home, safe and sound, stop and think. Think for just a moment of those who are dead on this 4th of July because of the greed and insanity of those who lied this country into an illegal and immoral war. When the holiday is ended, think for just a moment of those who will be dead in time for the next Independence Day. And then sit back and wonder whether there was anything at all to celebrate. You can find this if you want a copy. Don't email me. Email TV or go to tvnewslies.org. tvnewslies.org, and you'll find it. Dead on the 4th of July. Oh, talking about dead soldiers is such a bummer. Right, Reg? You got to live here in Georgia, where so many of these guys, from the embarkation point, or de-embarkation, what's the right word, Kathy? Where they ship out of here for Iraq and Afghanistan, and then and leave their wives and children behind, for the most part. 99% are men. And then their corpses come back here, but we're not allowed to see those pictures or to honor them collectively as a nation. Except, well, okay, on Veterans Day maybe, on Flag Day maybe. Now, 4th of July, we'll all get teary-eyed and sit in the square in Decatur, Georgia, or somewhere in a small town in California or Oregon or Minnesota and watch the fireworks go off and be happy. All right, back to... wait a minute. This is from Sanchez in Montebello, California. He says, Senior Malloy, a large group of trust fund babies from the West Side communities of Los Angeles and Malibu are currently holding a protest over the commutation of Louis Libby's sentence. Apparently, they agree with your opinion regarding Paris Hilton serving more prison time than Scooter Living. Upon hearing your words via Sirius Satellite Radio, an impromptu sit-in has broken out in front of the federal building in Westwood. Young trust fund babies are currently shouting out the time-tested chant, No Justice, No Peace, and Free Paris, Free Paris. You should see it, Mike. It's lovely. Everyone's wearing Prada. Oh, my God. Senator Charles Schumer says, As Independence Day nears, we're reminded one of the principles our forefathers fought for was equal justice under the law. This commutation completely tramples on that principle. Former Ambassador Richard Carlson, who helped raise millions for Libby's defense fund, said, That's fantastic. It's a great relief. Scooter Libby did not deserve to go to prison. I'm glad the president had the courage to do this. Bush said Cheney's former aide was not getting off free. Bush said, The reputation he gained through his years of public service and professional work in the legal community is forever damaged. His wife and young children have also suffered immensely. He will remain on probation. The significant fines imposed by the judge will remain in effect. The consequences of his felony conviction on his former life as a lawyer, public service, and private citizen will be long-lasting. Let's compare that to... You all are aware, aren't you, what happened to the former governor of Alabama, Don Siegelman, a Democrat? He was governor from 1999 to 2003. He was sentenced last Thursday in Montgomery, Alabama, to serve more than 7 years in prison and fined $50,000. He was convicted of bribery and obstruction of justice last year in a trial that anyone will agree was engineered by Karl Rove, who wanted to eliminate him as a threat to Republican dominance in the South. Now, the district judge who sentenced him denied a request from Siegelman's lawyers that he remain free while his case was on appeal. And 61-year-old Don Siegelman was led off to jail last week. Siegelman was once considered, and I think he's ruined now, one of the Democratic Party's brightest stars here in the South. And in his defense, he contended that presidential political strategist Karl Rove, who has had a long history of involvement in Alabama politics, going all the way back to sending Georgia over here to campaign. Well, I don't know that Karl Rove did that, but George certainly was over here and hid, so he couldn't be sent to Vietnam. Anyway, Siegelman claims that Rove was behind a series of charges filed against him over the last 7 years. The prosecution of Don Siegelman contained so many oddities that even a Republican prosecutor, former Arizona Attorney General Grant Wood, said recently that the conviction, quote, does not pass the smell test, end quote. Woods, a Republican former Arizona Attorney General, has called for a congressional inquiry into the indictment and conviction of Don Siegelman. A House Judiciary Committee staff member told the LA Times this week, or last week, that that committee is looking at the Siegelman prosecution as part of this broader examination into whether the Bush Justice Department, tilted public corruption cases against Democrats. The committee has already received a copy of a sworn statement from a Republican lawyer in Rainesville, Alabama, by the name of Dana Jill Simpson, who says that in 2002 she was on a campaign conference call with aides working to elect Siegelman's opponent, current Alabama Governor Bob Riley. Ms. Simpson, Republican lawyer, said in her statement that on the call she heard a Bob Riley strategist tell other campaign workers not to worry about Siegelman because his gals and Carl would make sure the Justice Department pursued a case against him. If you don't know anything about the Siegelman case, please do a Google search on Don Siegelman and see what comes up. More about this here in just a second. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Show, you are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's 21 past the hour. We're talking here for a moment, and I should have done this last week, about Don Siegelman, the Democratic governor, former Democratic governor of Alabama, who was sentenced last Thursday to 7 years in prison on a job done by the Bush crime family that is astonishing in its effectiveness. He got two sets of indictments filed by Bush administration prosecutors. The first one was filed in 2004. That set was dropped after the judge in that case said the prosecution's evidence was suspect. It was tossed out. The second set of indictments was filed in 2006 and charged the former governor with 101 counts of criminal wrongdoing. He was acquitted of 94 of them. And they were related to bribery for accepting a $500,000 contribution from a guy named Scrushy. Hold on just a second here. He was Richard Scrushy, the former head of the Health South hospital chain. What happened was Siegelman accepted a $500,000 contribution from Scrushy for an education lottery campaign. Didn't go to Siegelman. It went to this lottery campaign, and after that, Siegelman appointed Scrushy to a state hospital board. The prosecutors claim that Governor Siegelman and Mr. Scrushy were engaged in a pay-to-play scheme. Siegelman said it was simply politics as practiced around the nation every day. He pointed out that three previous Republican governors of Alabama had appointed Scrushy to the same board. Do you understand that? Siegelman also was convicted of obstruction related to receiving $9,000 that he said was given when he sold a motorcycle. When he sold a motorcycle! He was sentenced to 7 months in prison. And the judge said, go to prison now. They handcuffed him, a former judge, a former governor, and took him away last Thursday. Now, Laura McGann, writing at TPMMuckraker.com tonight, writes, if 30 months in prison was too stiff a sentence for Scooter Libby, then 7 years is too long for former Governor Don Siegelman, according to one of his lawyers. Montgomery-based attorney Susan James, who handled Siegelman's sentencing hearing, predicts that Bush's decision to commute Libby's sentence will be referenced in briefs across the country soon, including her own. Ms. James said Bush has basically come in and said the sentence is too harsh. I'll find some way to weave that into our argument. And like I just explained, Siegelman was convicted of corruption charges stemming from appointing healthcare CEO Robert Scrushy to a public board. Not for taking money to put in his pocket. This is what the Bush crime family will do to you. Oh, my God. But unlike Libby, who was given 6 to 8 weeks to report to jail, Siegelman was taken into custody immediately after the judge announced his sentence. And before the commutation announcement this evening, Siegelman's lawyers had argued that Siegelman should have been allowed to remain free, like Libby, while awaiting his appeal. Siegelman's lawyers plan to argue before the 11th Circuit that his sentence violated his right to a jury trial because the judge took into consideration charges on which he was acquitted. Siegelman maintained throughout his trial that his prosecution was politically motivated. An affidavit signed by a Republican lawyer has supported this claim by implicating White House strategist Karl Rove as having a hand in the case. Jesus. When you are a member of the Bush crime family, when you are a made man like Irving Lewis Libby was, when you are on the payroll of AIPAC, when you are part of the Project for a New American Century that advocates invasions and occupations around the globe, especially in Muslim countries, when you are this kind of an evil son of a bitch, you have protection by Bush and Cheney. You are protected. You can do whatever you want to do. You can have people killed if that's what you want to do. You can shoot somebody in the face. You can do anything you want to do. And you will not go to jail.
Left out by right-wing talk radio, you found a home with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. This is what Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald said. This is at Crooks and Lawyers regarding this commutation. Patrick Fitzgerald said, we fully recognize that the Constitution provides that commutation decisions are a matter of presidential prerogative, and we do not comment on the exercise of that prerogative. We comment only on the statement in which the president termed the sentence imposed by the judge as excessive. The sentence in this case was imposed pursuant to the laws governing sentencing, which occur every day throughout this country. In this case, an experienced federal judge considered extensive argument from the parties and then imposed a sentence consistent with the applicable laws. It is fundamental to the rule of law that all citizens stand before the bar of justice as equals. That principle guided the judge during both the trial and the sentencing. Although the president's decision eliminates Mr. Libby's sentence of imprisonment, Mr. Libby remains convicted by a jury of serious felonies, and we will continue to seek to preserve those convictions through the appeals process. Because now the next step, of course, is to try to get this in front of a Reagan or Bush II appointee who will reverse, remember this thing's still on appeal, reverse the convictions altogether so that Irving Lewis Libby walks a free man with no convictions whatsoever. This is incredible. Even Pappy Bush wasn't able to do this with Caspar Weinberger, who committed perjury and obstruction of justice regarding the Iran-Contra hearings and scandal, and several other members, high-ranking members of the Bush 1 crime family. Even Bush 1, well, Bush 1 didn't have Karl Rove, and Bush 1 didn't have Dick Cheney. This is Cheney at work. We know this. We know it's Cheney. Bush, in the first place, Bush can't think. Secondly, he doesn't have a clue of what's going on. He was out fishing with his blood-sucking brother in pain and torture, Vladimir Putin, for the past 3 days. Bush does not watch television. Bush does not pay attention to the news. Bush doesn't have a clue as to what's going on. Cheney does. 5 hours after the appeals court said, go to jail, do not pass go. Look, Libby had been issued a federal a prison number, an inmate number. He'd already been issued a number. He was ready to go. Who do you suppose wrote Bush's statement? Huh? One of Dick Cheney, well, David Addington. That's who wrote it. And Cheney signed off on it. And somebody says, should we let Bush know about it? Hell no. He's fishing. Release the statement. And then send him a cable to get him a call. Tell him to come home. Tell him to come back to D.C. Go to Camp David. Go stick his head up his ass. But just release the statement. And they released it. Over Bush's signature. And it means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. Let me ask you. Does this sound something even remotely like what Bush would write? This case has generated significant commentary and debate. Critics in the investigation have argued that a special counsel should not have been appointed, nor should the investigation have been pursued after the Justice Department learned who leaked Ms. Plame's name to columnist Robert Novak. Furthermore, the critics point out that neither Mr. Libby nor anyone else has been charged with violating the Intelligence Identities Protection Act or the Espionage Act. Does that sound like him? Both critics and defenders of this investigation have made important points. I have made my own evaluation. In preparing for the decision I am announcing today, I have carefully weighed these arguments and the circumstances surrounding this case. 5 hours after the appeal was denied, the appeal to keep this criminal, this felon, out of prison, during the appellate process, 5 hours after he was told to go to jail, Mr. Bush issues this statement. Sure, he does. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? All right, back to your phone calls. Oh, my God, back to your phone calls. Let's start with Scott, who's listening on KPTK in Seattle. Scott, welcome to the program.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I really want to say about this Google Libby thing is anybody really surprised that this was going to happen? Because I'm not.
I was. I'm just blown away. I never considered commutation, Scott. I figured he was locked in. He couldn't pardon him until his last day in office, like Clinton pardoned Mark Rich. I thought that's how it would come down. That as Bush was walking out the door, he'd issue a pardon. I had no idea he would do something like this.
Well, you forget Cheney is not part of the executive, remember? Because that's who's behind this.
Well, I have no doubt this is Cheney. You know, Irving Libby was Cheney's boy.
They seem to think that they can do anything that they want to anyway. So, no, I wasn't surprised about this.
Well, I have to say I was surprised at the commutation.
I
figured a pardon was coming, but I also figured that Libby would go to jail for a while. Oh, well.
Well, that's your representative government working hard for you.
Aren't they?
What I wanted to bring up, and only because you brought it up briefly at the end, somebody emailed you about Mike Webb up here in Seattle. You remember when I was talking to you last week about the example of the radio station up here and the person that had gotten canned? That was the guy who I was talking about.
Oh, really?
And, you know, and it's kind of surreal to me because I think if I was not I think I was one of the last callers that actually spoke to him before he had disappeared.
Is that a fact?
And, you know, the thing of it is that, you know, he really was an activist, and especially he was really outspoken against the police up here and how corrupt that they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Now, his family speculates that it was somebody who was living with him because he was a recovering addict, and he liked to help recovering addicts get over their demons and stuff. So they kind of suspect that way. I mean, there's kind of a lot of speculations of how he might have died. But
right. The
one thing that was really strange about that was that the fact that they had cadaver dogs going through his house a couple of weeks before they actually found the body. And they didn't pick up on any scent.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently his friends and family had been up there and had searched it. And then all of a sudden, you know, it was a worker, it was a day worker that was hired by the real estate company that owned the house that found the body. So there's kind of a lot of explaining to do by the police about what really happened about that. But, yeah, you know, he really was an outspoken activist up here about that. And very loud. I mean, he had a lot of fans, but, you know, he also made a lot of people angry, too. And I think maybe one of the reasons that I think it was Randy that emailed you about that, about one of the progressive voices being silenced, because, you know, in these big crazy days and times and stuff, you know, it's just something that it was just kind of really surreal about what had happened.
Well, I've heard the name Mike Webb before. I did not know about him, but I am familiar with the story now, and it is a scary story. There's no question. So, as it develops, stay in touch with us about it. Okay, Scott?
Yeah.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Michelle is calling from Visalia, California, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for speaking with me. I listen
sure.
to you every night, and, you know, you are a beacon of light in this darkness that we live in these days.
Okay.
I was calling about, you know, a few weeks ago you spoke with a man who had just turned 30, and he was talking about how optimistic he was about things, and you were telling him that you just didn't feel that way anymore and that you hoped that the 30th generation would be able to kind of carry the torch somehow. And I'm 31, and I'll tell you what, every single day it's just getting harder and harder to cope. And you talk about rage fatigue. I feel as though, like, somehow I have, like, a present traumatic stress syndrome or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's every day, every single day, I'm shocked by the depravity and the heinousness and the murders and the disgust that I feel about our government. And I have a 7-year-old daughter, and I know that you have a young child, too, and I don't know what I did. You know, giving birth to a child in these days, and I look at people who have newborn babies, and I think, my God, what are we bringing our children? What are we bringing new children into?
Maybe to save the world. You never know.
Is there time though? I mean, honestly, Is there
well,
time?
Well, people like you and me have got to believe there is time because we do have these little kids. We got to believe it.
No, I'm terrified for her. And not terrified in an incapacitating way, but terrified in that I don't know what her future is going to look like, and I feel helpless.
I know exactly what you mean. Michelle, let me leave it there. We got a break. Thanks for checking in. We'll be right back, Truth Seekers. Stay with us.
Conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Malloy.
I'm going to leave the city, got to get away.
This is the Malloy program on the Nova M Radio Network. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. Back to your calls. Bruce is calling from California, listening on the internet. Hey, Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I want to make a comment about Scooter Libby and about the pardon process itself. I don't honestly believe that the Founding Fathers intended that the presidential pardon should be used to pardon criminals within an administration or a former administration like Ford did.
Mm-hmm.
My personal gut feeling is that that's not why it was placed there. And I'm wondering whether a constitutional amendment that would prohibit future presidents from using the pardon that way would actually work.
Well, you keep in mind now, this is not a pardon. There's a
well,
different...
Well, a pardon commutation slash commutation privilege that the privilege that the president has.
I don't think that should be removed, no.
But just limit it so that it cannot be used for members of administrations or former administrations who are convicted of a crime in office or while serving the government.
Well, I am not versed enough in that sort of law to really, I hate to say
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I'm not either. I'm hoping that one of the listeners is and could answer the question.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it seems to me that it's time for a constitutional amendment to put a stop to this crap. It's been going on since Ford and before.
Yes.
With, you know, people pardoning all these criminals all the way down through history, and it's just wrong.
Well, I agree in spirit with what you're saying, Bruce. I really am. I'm just afraid that if there were commutation allowances for people other than members of a sitting administration during the time they're sitting or after, If you said, well, Bruce's sentence can be commuted, but Casper Weinberger's can't, then all of a sudden, or I'm sorry, Irving Libby's can't, then all of a sudden you have two layers of justice, and the only way that's applied is to black folk. Are you there? Is Bruce there? Bruce?
No, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Hold on.
All right. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened, Bruce, but I appreciate your call. I don't know what happened. No, I hear what Bruce is saying. But two systems of justice for white people is outrageous. If we have two systems of justice in this country that we do, and we always have, one is for white people, the other is for black people. Don't you all get that? I mean, that's the way it's always been, right? I see you black folks in the audience going, mm-hmm. Boy, is that the truth. White people going, what the hell is he talking about now? So I don't know, Bruce. I don't know. Seriously, I don't know how to answer that question. I would not tamper with a president's right to commute or pardon. I agree with you. It's horribly misused by these Republican vermin. So. Kevin is calling from Washington, D.C., listening on the Internet. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program. Kevin? Have we got Kevin? Let's put Kevin on hold, and either our phone system is all screwed up or we'll work it out here. Dale is calling from Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Dale, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike. Great to be on the program. I thought that pardon was put in there for, you know, pardoning a guy that maybe served like 19 of a 20-year sentence or something like that, you know, but
Dale, just let me interrupt one second. Folks, we got to stop calling this a pardon because it wasn't. It's a commutation. And all that means is a sentence can be a sentence can be altered. He is still a convicted felon. He still has to pay a fine. He still has to, I believe, do community service. The only thing Bush did was remove the prison part. So that a pardon is when someone's slate is wiped clean and there's not even a record. Casper Weinberger is not a convicted felon, even though he was going to be a convicted felon. So we I think it's important that we make the distinction here. Libby was not pardoned today. His sentence was commuted. That means changed. That's all.
Yes, I believe so. But I believe the RNC will probably cough up the $250,000.
Probably.
Yeah, that he'll end up like G. Gordon Liddy with possibly a $200,000 a year gig on the radio, and he could even be teaching at some school, you know. So.
I'm sure he will. Or he'll wind up like Paul Wolfowitz as the senior member to a very lovely and high-minded conservative think tank, like Wolfowitz is going to the American Enterprise Institute to make up for his loss of income after having been canned from the World Bank. It's nice how this works, right?
Right. He'll probably be competing with Rumsfeld for the World Bank then, I suppose. But, you know, Mike, I'm a bit of a media watcher.
Uh-huh.
And I find that I've listened to people, historians, talk and all that, and they talk about this neoconservative movement. And I've heard the years, like 20 to 60 years, that we might have, this is what we might be dealing with when you talk about trends. And I was just wondering if you think I'm being a little too pessimistic there, or
what is it that you think we might be dealing with?
We might be dealing with this neoconservative movement for 20 to 60 years.
Well, I think that it is going to be altered dramatically if the truth of these bastards ever comes out. I don't know. The neocons also exist inside the Democratic Party, too. So I don't know if we'll be able to purge either party. Hey, Dale, thanks. I got to go. Appreciate you checking in, pal. We'll talk again. We'll be back after the break, Truth Seekers. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Don't forget, in about a week and a half, on a Thursday evening, July 12th, I'll be traveling to Seattle for what's going to be a really super gig put together by KPTK in Seattle. And substituting for me that night will be Sam Cedar. So all of you Sam Cedar fans, tune in and just inundate him with listeners, okay? And also, XM listeners can now hear the program beginning next Monday, July 9th, on XM Channel 167. And just FYI, there will be a replay of one of the programs Wednesday night, July 4th. But we take the day off and go watch the fireworks. Of course, I don't know if they're going to have any here in Georgia because this place is ready to go up in another big forest fire, you know, like most of the country, right? I am still having trouble with the McCain deal that I talked about earlier in the program. John McCain has introduced federal legislation to protect right-wing talk radio shows from the reinstatement of past rules that required dissenting voices to be given equal time. Now, what drives me insane about this, aside from the fact that McCain and Republican Senators John Thune of South Dakota and Norm Coleman of Minnesota have put this legislation forward that would prevent the reinstatement of the Fairness Doctrine. Aside from that, is the fact that this puts the bloody hatchet to the lie, doesn't it? That it's right-wing, that it's liberal media. If there is a liberal media, which there is not anywhere in the country, but if there were, wouldn't these thugs be salivating for a return to the Fairness Doctrine to give their poor, whipped-on side a chance to have its views known, right? But there is no such thing as liberal media in this country. There has not been for at least 20 years. But here they are, these rat bastards, led by John McCain, trying to get a law passed that says the Fairness Doctrine, done away with in 1987, cannot come back, unlike Dick Cheney, who pulls a stake out of his heart every century and comes back to haunt people. Quick email here, then back to your calls. Brooke in Lowell, Indiana, writes, "Dear Mike, as the Romans must have sat in disbelief as their empire disintegrated, I too sit in disbelief tonight. I cannot believe what I'm witnessing before my own eyes, the demise of this democracy, the crumbling right before my eyes. After the Supreme Court's recent decisions, I once again believe stupidly that the court would be the last blow that we would tolerate from this group of mobsters. Yet today, as I logged on, the headline on Yahoo was, 'Bush commutes Libby's sentence.' This crime family is so arrogant, they don't even wait a day before commuting the sentence. Maybe Nancy Pelosi will now put impeachment back on the table. Will our country survive? God, I hope so." Thanks, Brooke. Listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. All right, back to your phone calls. Jake, who is listening on KGOE in Arcata, California. Jake, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going great. Thank you.
You know, it is time for impeachment to be back on the table. You know, I just saw a poll here in California that was done on Nancy Pelosi, and she had a 52% approval rating here in California in March. Mm-hmm. Well, now it's down to 39%. So who are these Democrats who think it's a good idea to back down on the war, who think it's a good idea not to impeach Bush and Cheney? Mm-hmm. You know, our congressman here, Mike Thompson, he's a conservative blue dog. He's against impeachment. He's taking money from defense contractors. You know, what a surprise. Right. You know, the whole thing is that the public wants Bush and Cheney out. Bush and Cheney have announced that they are dictators and above the law. None of their buddies have to go to jail for any of their crimes. So what's the only remedy? The constitutional way to handle this is impeachment. Put him on trial in the Senate. That's what the people want. That's what the Democrats and the Republicans in the Congress need to do.
Right. You certainly get no disagreement from me, Jake. The Democratic Party leadership has decided against that course of action. Now, some people are saying, maybe people wiser than you and me, I don't know, are saying that let this thing play out. That impeachment, this is what the argument is, and not that I agree with it, that impeachment would cloud these hearings that are ongoing. And I think people like Leahy and Waxman are going to continue with hearings to fully expose what these rat bastards have been up to. So I don't know. I agree with you. I think your point of view would be to impeach him and do what the Constitution says. But you and I apparently don't have a voice in this, so... what's the alternative? To wait and see how it plays out, I guess, right?
Well, you know, for everybody to raise their voices, to, you know, let our leaders know
that's another choice. but the people are already doing that. I mean the demand for justice here, the demand for Cheney and Bush to be gone, to get the hell out of Dodge, it's already there. Nobody's paying any attention.
Yeah, well, these hearings, like you say, they're going to uncover, you know, the crimes. Well, what are they going to do once the crimes are uncovered? Just let them get off, just like Libby? What good is it going to do? They need to impeach these idiots and get them out.
Well, again, you get no argument from me at all. None. I appreciate you checking in, Jake. Thanks.
Bye.
All right, take care. We'll talk again. Curtis is calling from Florida, listening on WINZ. Hey, Curtis, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been listening to you for a number of years now. Really,
well, thank you.
I just wanted to kind of follow up with a broader sense, broader perspective on the kids in our society.
Okay.
Thing you were speaking about. And just a little background, anybody that, you know, touch on a lot of things, anybody that thinks that the Bushes aren't criminals and syndicate criminals are just not paying attention too well. Anybody that thinks that they didn't at the very least, which I think is at the very least, turn their heads during 9/11 and have something to do with all that, anybody that pays any attention and knows any history and knows any of the background of all of that, and the Iraq War, I mean, the last, in my opinion, of course, obviously, the last real president and his family said, we are not trading blood for oil. And that was started back in the 50s. Kennedy said that. Of course, you see what happened to them. And the last one, Ted, all of his family would slap him around if they were still here. It's just ridiculous. But I think that it's a privilege to be able to bring the kids up. I've got a few, and to make sure that they are speaking the truth, the real truth. One of the problems also is this guy, GW, and his dad, but especially GW, being a representative of so-called Christianity is just totally absurd. It's as absurd as the Pope and all of his garbage, so closely tied with the Nazis. Does anybody have any kind of sense? Do they forget what happened yesterday?
Most people don't even know it, Curtis, much less forget it. You're talking about Pope, whatever the hell his name is. He was a part of the Hitler Youth. And as far as the so-called Christians in this country, yeah, you're right. You know, they're not. You know, I don't have any reason to follow any particular faith. I'm like I've said before, I'm total atheistic about this religious claptrap. On the other hand, Christianity presents itself as this loving, forgiving. You know, that's what their Messiah was supposed to have been all about. You know, and these people who say they represent that Christian Messiah are nothing but killers. So yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, Curtis. All right, Curtis, we've lost you completely. I'm not sure if it's your phone or if we're having a problem tonight. But anyway, thanks for checking in. Quick break here. We'll be back and take more of your calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Stay with us. Don't like the Northeast. He hates the coast and he hasn't got a friend in France. Jesus votes Republican and he saved us from Al Gore. He believes in trickle down and shipping jobs offshore. He wishes all them unemployed would stop trying to tax his wealth. Your brother's keep but just don't apply, cause it's everybody for himself. Jesus came in glory and in glory he shall return. The preacher said in God we trust, ye Democrats shall burn. No butterflies.
Well, interfere a state religion. That's not what we're going for. We don't want for one governmental religion. Government will never, you know, say this is the religion. We're free from society for religion.
Jesus, 21 past the hour. Email here from John, who says, Mike, Rachel, I guess that's Rachel Maddow, pointed out that it is sleazier than it seems, this commutation. If it were a pardon, Libby would no longer be able to take the fifth when Congress starts asking questions. Since it is only a commutation, Scooter is still in the appeal process, and he can keep quiet when Conyers and Waxman start asking stuff. Jesus, I hate these people, too. From John. Okay, back to your calls. Another John calling from Desert Hot Springs, California. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. Good to hear you tonight.
I
was reading an article.
You're listening on Sirius Satellite Radio, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I was reading an article on Google here when this first came out, and what I read was one of the reasons they came out with this commutation now was that this kind of it removes the question of pardon during the debates for the current slate of candidates as they run up to the election. Like, would you pardon Scooter Libby? Because
right.
If he'd gone to jail, and like you were saying, usually the president pardons people as he walks out the door, and it would become an issue in the campaign for these new people. Like, would you pardon Scooter Libby?
Right.
And it would actually bring up the whole thing closer and closer to the date of the election, and they'd have to answer, like, well, as president, I would, you know, what? And this way, more or less, put the kibosh on that where they can. They can do like Fitzgerald could comment, like, well, the president has this prerogative and like that, and they can't really be have their feet held to the fire. Like, well, what do you think about pardoning this guy? And they can remove that as an issue in the debates for these guys.
Right. Well, that's a good point. And I don't think any of us should ever for a moment think that Bush, Cheney, Rove, or at least Cheney and Rove are not calculating enough to come up with what you just described. There was no doubt that I don't think that Irving Lewis Libby was going to receive some sort of dispensation regarding his crimes from Bush. But, you know, like I said earlier tonight, I assumed it was going to be a pardon. But you're right. You make a good point.
And I don't know if you ever read the Nixon pardon. It's a pardon for future crimes also.
Yeah.
And like that Noam Chomsky, I don't know if you who he is, but he said that actually meant that he was given the first license to kill in America.
The who was?
Richard Nixon.
Richard Nixon?
Because he was pardoned for his current crimes, and then in there the wording was such that it said, and future crimes.
That's right.
And so
oh
he was actually
God.
Given permission to commit crimes in the future, which, you know.
Oh, my God. That never crossed my mind. But it's just astonishing what Republicans can do, and I'm not surprised that Noam Chomsky figured that out.
Yeah, he's a great American.
Great American, yes, he is. Yes,
all right, well, nice talking to you, and have a good night.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye. I appreciate it. Take care. Charles is calling from Connecticut, listening on the internet. Hey, Charles, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey.
Let's see. We've tried using. Soapbox One, they don't listen. Soapbox Two, they don't count the votes as per how they're cast.
Right.
What jury?
Right.
We are in box number four.
We're damn close. Bush today made it very clear he's going to nullify, to some extent, the jury box as well as the ballot and the soap, and that does leave just the ammo, doesn't it?
Because Pelosi and Reid have to be taken off the table. I mean, if the Constitution is not in play, then, you know, the document that keeps them safe,
right,
then won't be at play. Because since the 30s, the Republicans have declared a war against America. And I predict that next summer, you're really going to see it. I predict that Cheney will probably order some child who will be guilty of being 2 years old to be shot,
okay,
or something in here. And they won't even disguise it as a terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a war. This is people are beginning to wake up to think the story about September 11th doesn't add up. they have to wrap their mind around the fact that Pol Pot, Mussolini, Hitler are not something that can happen there. It's happening here.
Right.
We're not close to fascism. We're in it.
We're in it. We're in it up to our knees, and if something isn't done, we're going to be in it up to our eyeballs. I hear what you're saying. Charles, thanks for checking in, panel. I appreciate it. Quick break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard.
Dictatorship seem orderly. When one man makes all the decisions, there is no need for negotiation or compromise.
Five before the hour. As a follow-up here to what we talked about earlier this evening about the Don Siegelman case, the former governor of Alabama that was sent to prison as a result of efforts against him by the Bush crime family, most notably Karl Rove and probably Dick Cheney. The information was sent to us by Daryl in Birmingham tonight about his attorney asking for the same sort of justice for former Governor Siegelman that Louis Libby got today. And that is a commutation of the sentence, or not even a commutation, just the Governor Siegelman be allowed to remain free on bond while his appeal goes through, since obviously, and I think it's obvious to anyone who has been following this case, obviously, former Governor Don Siegelman has been railroaded into prison and is a victim of the Bush crime family. And as I mentioned earlier tonight, there have been several calls now for congressional investigations of this particular case by Republicans. The former Republican Attorney General of the state of Arizona has asked for Congress to investigate this. But anyway, here's the latest that Daryl just sent us. Former Governor Don Siegelman's attorney, Susan James, law office, was broken into over the weekend. Apparently, the burglars went through her confidential files. Miss James thinks someone was after her files on Siegelman, but she says she had them with her. She had them when she went to Atlanta to visit her client for the first time on Saturday. Apparently, he's being held at the federal lockup here. And the article goes on, but it's just, I mean, when, Congresswoman Pelosi, when, Senator Reid, are these sons of bitches going to be impeached? What does it take? Lying us into a war, that's not enough? Okay. Perverting the Justice Department, that's not enough? Okay. Destroying the EPA, that doesn't work? Okay. Violating the Geneva Conventions, not enough for you? Okay, what the hell does it take? What does it take? Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting why Bill Clinton was impeached. Well, then somebody please give George Bush a... Oops. Almost said it. Almost said it. Oh, God. All right, back to your phone calls. Evan is calling from Durham, North Carolina, listening on the Internet. Hey, Evan, welcome to the program.
Hey. I'm listening. Even to the BBC, they had a debate on, and you got these people who are still out there spreading this garbage that there was no underlying crime that was committed in the first place.
That's the part. Yeah, that's what the right wingers are going to be saying tomorrow. They're going to be celebrating this. You know, the right wingers that control the liberal media, especially radio. This is what the rap is going to be. Bush had to pardon him because no crime was committed. And this just makes me sick. In other words, the jury and the judge and the prosecutors were all insane and crazy. If the crime of revealing this CIA, and I have no respect whatsoever for the CIA, I couldn't give a damn if they all got burned. But as long as the laws are on the books and these bastards decide to break the law, if the CIA agent was outed and Irving Lewis Libby was part of the plot to lie and obfuscate and cover up, that's the crime. That's the crime. And that's not obviously that's not what the right wing talk show hosts on radio are going to talk about.
No, that's not what they're going to talk about. It's just, I mean, how can you continue to, you know, it seems like what they do is they talk to people who are not paying attention.
Right.
They talk to people who, you know, they just look at the first 4-5 minutes of the news, they look at the front page, the headline, and then just go on by their way. You can tell these people anything, and they'll soak it right up.
They're Republicans. So,
well, it's not just Republicans. If it was just Republicans, it wouldn't be that bad. But there are people, you know, who are just apathetic. They don't go Republican or Democrat or whatever. It's all just
anyway. But if you ask listeners of Limbaugh or Hannity or Savage or Hewitt or the rest of these thugs what their political affiliation is, every single one of them would say Republican if they were telling the truth. If they want to lie a little bit, they'll say independents. But anyway, I get your point. I get your point. Evan, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Take care. We'll talk again. All right, we've got some open lines here, and we still have 15 minutes of the program, so you better call in. 800-989-1480 is the number, 800-989-1480. Benedict is calling from Lake Worth, Florida, listening on the Internet. Benedict, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
You know, self-conscious.
Yeah, but also it sounds like you're talking in an echo chamber. Do you have me on a speakerphone?
No, I'm on a remote phone, and I have my...
You what? Hello, Benedict? All right, let's put Benedict on hold and see if we can get it back in a second. We are having some technical problems, as they say tonight, with the phone system, either here in Atlanta or at our home office in Phoenix. We'll get them worked out, I promise you. All right, this is from Kathleen, who writes, like you, I'm shocked as well regarding Libby. I hate these criminals probably more than you. As a student going for my MSW, I looked up again how prisoners with mental illness, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, serious mental illnesses are treated. Had also seen a show on MSNBC how prisoners are treated in the same Twin Towers LA facility that Paris Hilton was in. Prisoners, if attempting suicide, receive no psychiatric help. Instead, they're sent to isolation, which can push them into psychosis. As a human rights director stated, for the mentally ill, prison is the worst place they can be. I may leave this country someday. Right now, I can't afford it. Kathleen.
the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now. He's
your host for a Pian's Brian's Future, it's Mike Malloy.
I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse.
It's about 13 before the hour. I think we've got the bugs worked out now, but we only have 13 minutes of program left. Thanks to Ian Huff, who made a valiant effort to engineer the program tonight, also answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Billy Foster, the moderator at NoThemRadio.com chat room. And is it tomorrow night? Elliot Cohen, author of Last Days of Democracy, will be on the program tomorrow night. So what time is he on, Kathy? First hour, second hour? First hour, I guess about 9:30 Eastern time. Elliot Cohen, author of Last Days of Democracy, on the program tomorrow. Thanks to Mark Marshall and the moderators at MikeMolloy.com. Who have I forgotten? Oh, yes. Catherine Bay, she who must be obeyed, the executive producer of this program. All right, back to some phone calls here before we are completely out of time. Do we have Dennis back? Dennis in Santa Rosa listening on the Quake? Dennis?
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Okay, that's much better.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Wondering, is there any chance that you could get Howard Dean on the program to maybe talk about his view of the Republicans' moves of the last few weeks?
I don't know. I'd rather hear your view, frankly. Dennis?
There's a lot of back and forth in politics. And if the Republican Party is stooping to the lows that they have as of late, I'm really scared that the next administration and future administrations will also stoop this low.
Well, okay. Why would you want Howard Dean's take on it, though?
Because I like experience. And other than Clinton's wife, most of the guys, Obama, the ones that Edwards, the candidates, the people...
Wait a minute. Did you say other than Clinton's wife?
Hillary. But, I'm not behind her at all. I think she's a Republican and Democrat clothing.
But Dennis, did you say Clinton's wife?
Yes, sir. I couldn't remember her name.
Oh, my God. Do you realize the faux pas you just committed?
No, sir.
Clinton's wife?
I didn't mean to be disrespectful.
Oh, but you were monumentally disrespectful. You just put the Mount Everest of disrespect on this program for Hillary Clinton. Not that I have any problem with people who don't like Hillary Clinton, but Jesus, Dennis, don't call her Clinton's wife.
But that's more to the point. If I was ever good at anything, it was a good...
Wait a minute, Dennis. I'll tell you what. Call her Senator Clinton.
Okay, Senator Clinton.
Thank you.
She's probably earned her position.
She what?
She's probably earned that position.
Probably.
Anyway, anytime I hear Howard Dean speak, it just resonates with truth and that he really believes in what's in the party and that he could really make a difference. And although I know other voters don't see it that way, yeah. I do.
Okay, all right. Well, Dennis, I'm glad you called in. I appreciate what you had to say. You just have to be careful with that Clinton's wife stuff. Oh, my God. Kathy is still got her head through the fake ceiling here in the studio. I mean, you lifted her right off her chair. And she's not a Hillary Clinton fan, but my God, don't call her Clinton's wife. Cindy is listening on the internet, calling from San Diego. Why aren't you listening on KSLD?
Well, I decided to just use my computer tonight. I do usually listen on the radio.
I thought maybe you were going to say, well, Mike, they dropped your program.
No, they better not. Okay. Actually, I have the internet. I have the Sirius radio, and I also have radio too. So.
You're covered, Cindy.
I'm tuned in.
You're covered.
Hey, but you want to hear the most ridiculous thing I heard today?
Yes.
I heard that Biden says we should flood the White House with calls regarding Scooter Libby.
Biden said that?
Biden said that. Now, that, is that the most ridiculous thing you ever heard? What is that going to do?
Nothing.
Like, they care?
Nothing.
Like, they care that we have to say about Scooter Libby being pardoned?
No.
I mean, Biden is the one that's supposed to be doing something about this.
Yeah,
we call Biden, and then Biden's supposed to do this stuff for us.
Let's flood Biden's office with phone calls demanding that he get in touch with Nancy Pelosi and begin impeachment.
I'm telling you, Mike, I am calling Pelosi, and I'm calling Reed. Not this week, because they're out, I guess, on vacation, and I'm telling them next week, you had better impeach the both of them.
I am sick to death about Bush and Cheney,
and I'm telling them they better impeach the both of them, or else they're in contempt of Congress and the Senate.
Were you surprised to hear today?
Yes, I was. Yes. I did not think it was going to happen. I've been listening all day to the radio, and I guess it happened late in the afternoon, and I heard it on Rachel Maddow's show, and I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you who was really PO'd about it was Keith Olbermann.
Oh, yeah.
He saw his show today. He was outraged.
Well, listen tomorrow or watch tomorrow Overman's program. I understand he's going to make a call for Bush and Cheney to resign.
Oh, good. Listen, yeah. Everybody get on the phone and start calling call Reed and Pelosi. Call them every day and say, we want them impeached. We want them impeached. We want them impeached. They will be so sick of hearing from us. Squeaky wheels get the grease, trust me.
That's true. Thanks, Cindy. I appreciate you checking in. All right, take care. Mark is calling from Harlem in New York City, listening on the Internet. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
Good. Do I sound like I'm talking in a baseball stadium like all the other callers?
You've been hearing that tonight, the echo?
Yeah, you know, now batting for the New York Yankees.
No, you sound fine. I swear to God we've had some problems tonight, but that's all right. Probably the NSA trying to destroy the program. But screw them. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, you know, the other night I called, Friday night, I thought I'd get a chance to talk, and then he said, Marge is on the line. And I said, oh, my God, I'm not going to make it after he talks to Marge.
That's true.
But I sent you an email a while back about my plan to institute campaign finance reform.
Uh-huh.
And that is, the Congress has power over the FCC. If the FCC should make all political announcements as public service announcements, unable to charge.
Right. I remember you just sent that a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And If they cannot charge those announcements, where do you think those PSAs are going to go in the lineup?
2 o'clock at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly.
Right, and then the candidates will have to get off their funky asses and go out and talk with the voters. Go to church and synagogue basements. Go to civic clubs.
Go
stand on street corners.
they might not even do it.
Yeah, have real debates. And all of a sudden, the money would disappear.
There you go. That's key.
Right. I hear you, Mark.
So, right to the FCC, everybody. Tell them, turn public political announcements into public service announcements.
Yeah, and the FCC will really, really respond to your letter, too. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Yeah, you know, most of the federal regulatory agencies under the Bush crime family are known for their responsiveness. You know, just let them know you're pissed off and they will do something, especially if enough letters come in, and they will do something to make it all right. James is calling from Portland, Oregon, listening on the Internet. Hey, James, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I'm sick and tired of you picking apart my report.
You're what? James!
I'm sick of it.
You're sitting. Now, say it again. We dropped you. You're sick and tired of my picking apart
our beautiful Republican Party. And I'm not kidding you. You are a liberal.
Hello, James?
You're scum.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, James. I love you. What is up with James? James, I don't know what to tell you, except someday all this will work out. It will. And the Republicans will be vindicated. Fascism will be a glorious result of 230 years of experimenting with a stupid democracy. And you, James, will have an exalted place in the pantheon of those who brought fascism to America. So, James, it's Joe from Tempe. Is that who it is? Joe, is that who that was? It wasn't James. It was Joe from Tempe. Joe, you're a true American. God loves you. Jesus loves you. I frankly think you're a half-witted jerk, but that doesn't matter because God and Jesus love you. Bye, Joe. We'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.